And welcome to the halfguarded.com Ford Gilbert Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary T. Gilbert. This is my co-host, Dan Ford.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
It's good.
Wonderful. You know, we're coming up. How was your weekend, Dan? Let's start with that. How was kind of our first non-football weekend of the year? Because I'm not counting the Pro Bowl.
Oh, well, nobody counts the Pro Bowl. Yeah, I just slept all weekend and then broke my leg today. So that's how things are going today. That's how things are going.
That's pretty exciting. There was one pretty big matchup this weekend, though.
Who's that?
Atlanta versus Boston for the championship. Did you hear about that?
The championship of best city? Because that's not a contest.
No, Atlanta, obviously.
Obviously.
But no, not for the big game, not the NFL title. For the WWE title.
Oh.
Yeah, Royal Rumble. So I want to get into that because I want to get into our first guest. We have a former co-host of yours, one Mr. Brad R. Raines.
Sure.
And I think you and him, you're going to break down the Rumble for us, right?
We got our best going on here?
Oh, yeah.
We were formerly professional wrestling podcasters. So.
Yeah, so what better than to have you two reunite and discuss this? So, let's jump to that right now.
Hello and welcome once again to the Fire Pro Podcast. It is the week of Monday, January 30th, 2017. What a year. Brad Ritzy, also here. Dan Ford, you're here, right? You're hanging out. You're going to hang out.
Where am I? Like, what have
this
I
is the Fire. This is the Fire Pro Podcast. We're going to talk about Fire Pro, right? What happened? I think I slept for like 8 months, and then we're here, right?
Like we just, sure, nothing happened over the last 8 months either. Like, just don't even bother looking up at the news.
Was I dreaming? I don't remember.
Look, the wrestling, the graps, it puts you to sleep. But
I had a weird dream that some stupid site kicked us off for some reason. I don't remember. Because we talked about wrestling on a wrestling site. It was really weird. I don't know, man. And you were there.
Oh. Well, I hate to break this to you, Brad, but you're not on the Fire Pro Podcast.
What? What is this?
The Fire Pro Podcast no longer exists. Although I think there's still a Twitter account. There's probably still an at Fire Pro Podcast.
Which I still have access to.
We briefly became champions at heart, and then we lost our heart and dissolved.
And our home, we became homeless.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, we became homeless and ceased to exist. You are now a guest of all things. A guest.
What? I have no power anymore.
No, you don't.
Shit.
I have wrested it from you. You are actually on the the halfguarded.com Gilbert and Ford Power Hour.
Whoa!
Just for old times' sake, last night was the Royal Rumble. Rumble Royale.
It was fun. Anyway, thanks once again for the first time for having me. I think we talked about this like 8 months ago, maybe even before. And it's like, yeah, we'll do that sometime, and then just kind of like it didn't happen. I assumed decided not to like me. I don't know.
No, this is what happened. You talked to me instead of Zach, because Zach is really good at talking to guests and getting shit lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get home from work every night at 9 o'clock and forget I have responsibilities. And then I should call people and let them know. That's a cool thing. But yeah, it's great to have you on the show. Like, obviously, we did a podcast for a year, didn't we? We made it a full year.
Yep. And there was an unaired podcast that we were going to do about sports that didn't actually happen. And there's a lot to talk about from that kind of thing. It's going to be like, some of that topic's probably going to be moved over a little bit because there's some weird stuff. But you were talking with the Rumble. Rumble? That was last night.
I just want to lead off with this, is that last year's Royal Rumble was the greatest Royal Rumble of all time because it had Braun Strowman on a Segway or whatever that was.
Yes.
Flying down the ramp.
I'm not going to say fat. because they're, you know, but the bigger wrestlers seem to be the ones that use them, or not all of them use them. It was weird.
Braun seems a little young to be on the Andre card.
I just think it was a time thing.
That's maybe he did already do the one run in. But what was your highlight of the Royal Rumble?
I mean, I like this two title matches. Like, it was the two title matches that were there. Like, I guess the two men's title matches. I don't want to be sexist or anything. I like the Bayley Charlotte. I did like the Bayley Charlotte match, but like the Kevin Owens Roman Reigns and the John Cena AJ Styles matches was really, really good and really fun to watch. And like Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns did a really good hardcore match, and it felt like stuff, and there was whatever. And then John Cena and AJ Styles kind of came and were awesome. Like, they had a bunch of good matches. Like, you went in and like everything was good. Like, the card was good. I liked the show. Even the parts that people didn't like Roman Reigns, but like you saw John Cena and AJ Styles come in, it felt big. Like, you had energy. It felt great. Like, I liked that match a lot.
Well, Roman Reigns lost the Royal Rumble and he lost the title match. What do people want from him? Like, he lost.
Do not breathe anymore. Next question.
Sure. I mean, look, we could talk for 4 hours and read a 78-page message board thread about why Roman Reigns isn't the guy, I guess. But that would be fun for literally not one person. My low light of the Royal Rumble was the fact that I didn't realize these shows start at 7, and so I missed almost the entire Kevin Owens Roman Reigns match because, like an idiot, I assumed that shows start at 8, and that the stuff that comes on before 8 is going to be like inconsequential, you know, the Ascension versus the Mulkey Brothers. I don't know who the tag teams are anymore.
I mean, all the matches were good. I mean, they went with what I like to call UFC style show, where it was just like, hey, we're gonna start at like 5 o'clock, and it's gonna be like 8. It's gonna be like 6 hours. So if you're crazy enough, you can start here. If you're not so crazy, but still kind of crazy, you can kind of start here. And I was crazy and started at 6 o'clock, but.
See, I feel like, you know, if I can criticize the E, and nobody criticizes WWE, so this is me walking out on a limb here. It's like, don't put, like, title matches on before 8 o'clock. Because normal people are not going to show up. There's plenty of normal people who are like, yeah, I'll kick in, like, after all the meaningless shit's over with. I'll come in around 8:30, 8:15.
Yeah.
Don't put like Charlotte match on at like 7:05, like it's the, you know, 1993 on TBS. Like, don't make me do that. But other than that was my only real criticism, because I thought it was a fun show. I hadn't watched a lot in recent times, and I thought I enjoyed it. I thought this year's Royal Rumble was the best Rumble they've had in
a long time,
like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, the thing that it kind of turned into. I mean, the only thing that really wasn't that great about it was that Randy Orton's kind of a ho hum winner. Like, it's not even bad. Like, I think Randy Orton's been better this year and last year, I guess, than he has in a while. Like, him and Bray Wyatt have been legit entertaining. So I didn't have a big problem with it. I loved Roman Reigns coming out at the end because people just flipped. It was amazing to see, and it's just like. And you knew, I don't know, maybe I'm just smart, but I just knew he wasn't going to win because that's not what they really do. But I don't know, yeah, I had fun. The whole card was fun. The Royal Rumble was fun. It was fun to see Brock Lesnar look like a fool again. It was fun to see Roman Reigns come out. I liked the show. Good show.
That's become like one of the most satisfying things in wrestling, is to see Brock Lesnar looking up at Goldberg going, what the fuck?
They've been doing it right. Amazing.
I do understand the people who criticize going, you're doing all this for like a 50-year-old guy. Like, come on. There's nobody under the age of 50 you could be doing this for. But at the same time, man, it's fun.
They can't, though, because Goldberg is over and Goldberg is believable and no one else is. Like, Goldberg can do that because he's a star. That's why
he can do it. That's kind of their fault, though, isn't it? Like, that's kind of a circular thing, right?
Kind
of. Like, Like, nobody else can do it because nobody else is over. But you're the one in charge of people being over. Not you. Not you specifically. Like,
yeah, well, me,
maybe
yes.
You are the puppet master.
Yes.
Maybe this is where the mask falls and we see who truly pulls the strings, but...
You mean do that with, like, yeah. Braun? You mean have Braun beat Lesnar in, like, 10 seconds? And then have him do that? I mean, I guess so.
Well, I mean, it would have to occur in an alternate universe where Braun is like, really over.
Braun is over with me. And I love him. And I wish he was the champion.
You and the all-hail crowd love the hell out of Braun. But, like, normal people...
Because he was rehabbed properly. Yeah. Because ever since they brought him out, they let him beat up jobbers, they had him have a sweet theme song where he yelled his own name.
Braun!
It's everything I want from a big man. They rehabbed him properly. But I mean, the Goldberg-Lesnar thing worked because Goldberg and Lesnar are big. Like, Goldberg came in, people had their eyes on it, and like they were ready, being like, all right, these two are going to be in, they hyped the match or whatever, and now... He comes in and does it in 2 seconds, and they're just like, all right, well, they're going to do that twice. And then they do. And then, I don't know, Brock's going to go in the woods and train.
The thing about Braun is that it's reminding me a lot of Rusev, where, like, there's a certain fan online who's like, Rusev is the best! They should put the belt on Rusev. And then, like, the average fan watching on TV and the average fan who goes to the arena is just like, oh, Rusev, okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's maybe.
Like, it's not... It doesn't seem to be clicking with, like, actual fans. It's just a thing for, like internet fans who are like, oh, there's a big guy. Ah, I kind of miss having big guys around.
I mean...
But I don't watch it enough right now to be able to definitively say that. I know that was the issue with Rusev.
I mean, that's probably true. Like, it's just, like, and people, and you get in a bubble, and then everyone says they're great.
Or, you know, just like one, if one influential, if one social media influencer starts saying over and over again that this guy's great, like, some segment of the population is going to go, yeah, they're right. So, like, Dave Meltzer says that Rusev is great. Yeah, Rusev should be in the Hall of Fame. Let's put him in. Next to Nakamura. Wouldn't that be fun? No.
I mean, that's how it works, but, you know, I apparently, like, they had Dave on Live Audio Wrestling, which is a Canadian thing, if I recall.
I remember I remember being a teenager, like, getting that Live Audio Wrestling stream at, like, 11 o'clock on a Sunday.
But, I mean, they went on, and it's just like, hey, so they were just like, everything sucks or whatever, and then Dave's just like, I thought it was good, and they were, like, mad at him. So,
good at the end.
I mean, you can't like WWE anymore. There's, like... Like, there's WWE fans, and there's New Japan fans. And
it's kind of healthy, though, for the wrestling business, isn't it?
I guess so, but it's just, the New Japan fans are, I mean, one, they haven't been watching for a long time, so it's just a new thing for them.
That wouldn't be fair to say about the LA, the Law guys, though.
No. I'm just saying, guys are, like, the super new fans. The hardcore New Japan people right now who are just like, WWE is garbage dog shit, and New Japan is amazing, great, super great, amazing.
I mean, yeah,
most
fair.
Of those...
I never watched a minute of New Japan until like 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
So,
3 years ago, yeah. And that's most people.
I'm totally in that club.
And that's...
Because I was all Japan for life in the 90s. Like, New Japan could go get fucked. I don't give a shit about those guys with their stupid Antonio Inoki fake poser MMA crap. And they're not real. Masawa's real.
And I mean, and that's fine. And I think that's cool. And it's nice to see people excited. And it's new. And it's exciting. And it's fun. And you know what? A lot of the wrestling is really great. And the styles is there. I don't think people know what Strong Style is anymore. But hey. Whatever.
Is it even a thing?
I mean, it is. It is a thing.
Anymore.
I mean...
do people even really have those kind of matches anymore?
I mean, they do.
Other than, like, one or two guys?
I mean, like, the New Japan's... Like, the Japanese style is... I mean, New Japan is aping WWE in a lot of stuff. Look at that Okada Omega match. Especially at the end.
Is New Japan aping WWE, or has just WWE been aping New Japan's psychology for a while? and now we're starting to call that WWE psychology.
I don't know if it's WWE specifically, but they're not pro. Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying, I guess. Like, for me, I've been watching like Japanese wrestling for 20 years, since like 94, 95, something like that, maybe 93. So like, I love it and it's great and whatever, but I'm like, it's not like a new exciting toy to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like I'm smarter than everyone else. Look at me, blah, 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 blah. My opinion's not any bigger than anyone else's, but I don't like it when people are just like, elitism, it's kind of stupid when you're an adult. It's like Ford Chevy people. It's like, get out of my face. There's so many ways to watch that kind of stuff.
Or like the Australians who get into a fight over Vauxhalls versus Holdens. Have you ever heard those people?
Nope.
Like there's Vauxhall. I think Vauxhalls are Fords and a Holden is like a Chevrolet. But it's like the brand names, like the Australian models, and like those people like get into like fist fights and knife fights over it in Australia over those brands. But if I can make my case here, why I think it's healthy that we're getting into a more, oh, your wrestling is bullshit, mine is better, is that during the 90s, like that was a thing. Like WCW fans would tune into WWF when it was doing something great. But otherwise, they'd be like, oh, that's bullshit wrestling. Like, y'all just sit around and pose and, you know, pull your dicks out. That's crap. Y'all just a bunch of fruit booties.
That was WCW wrestling?
Oh, that's what WCW fans would say about WWF.
I mean, sometimes.
Like, they would tune in if, like, something great happened, but otherwise, they'd be like, your wrestling is bullshit.
I was a WCW guy. Crap. That was me.
And then the WWF fans would do the same thing to WCW. If WCW had something really, really hot going, like the NWO or something, like 96 NWO, WWF fans would tune in and go, oh, okay, that's okay, but the rest of your shit is just hillbilly bullshit. Y'all don't know how to do anything. Like, you got this Dusty Rhodes on commentary. This guy's like, you know, a half a mongoloid. And like, they could sample each other's best shit, but like the average stuff, the WCW fan would go, that's crap, and the WWF fan would go, you're crap. And wasn't that a healthier wrestling business? When you had chocolate and vanilla. You like chocolate, I like vanilla. I'll have my vanilla, you can keep your nasty ass chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And in the post WCW world, it's just like we all gotta eat vanilla, whether you like it or not. Which probably is why there's so many hate watchers in wrestling these days.
Those are the people I don't like. That's the only people I really don't like. But there are hate sports fans too, I guess.
Hey, Brad, this has been great, but we'll pick this up next week. But until then, let's throw it back to Zach. See how Zach's doing.
Ah, I'm here. That was a fun, lively discussion. You and Brad do have good chemistry. Sad I had to sit that one out.
Sure.
But I understand we'll have Brad back next week for, we have kind of a theme week. We'll talk about that next week though. Dan, we are kind of at the witching hour here. Big games on Sunday. We're recording this on Wednesday. Before me and Wes kind of jump into, where we kind of break down the Super Bowl and just all the different factors going on, whether it's the political factors or just Brady versus Goodell. We also discussed the LeBron James Charles Barkley controversy in that segment. But before we jump to me and Wes, got any thoughts on the Super Bowl this Sunday as a kind of a non-NFL guy?
Man, I really hope Atlanta wins. I mean, for a lot of reasons, but I really want Atlanta to win. I don't really have an educated opinion on who's going to win. I just have my emotions. And my feelings,
Well, that's what football's all about. It's about emotion, feelings, not playing like it like a robot. Study. This isn't baseball, where it's about numbers and
football's pretty routines. Robotic. Football's pretty robotic and routine. Like,
well,
do your
it's
job.
Pretty emotional, Dan. I don't
like learn. Like, do your job. Don't worry about other people's job. Do your job.
Let's jump to me and Wes's preview. This is a big one. Fair warning, may have started drinking during that interview, and I'm not really sure how it's going to end. So I'm going to go ahead and apologize to the city of Boston for some things I probably
insinuated about you. Okay, before you throw it to them, fuck Boston. I'll give a good goddamn. Y'all know y'all got problems. Anybody from Boston who's not like a mentally weirdo, like, you know that, hey, we got some shit. The only people who try to claim that Boston is perfect are fucking mongoloids. So, yeah, get that out of the way before you...
And
before you
I think I said some disparaging things about the Irish, too. So I'm going to go ahead and apologize to any Irish listeners.
Well, let's apologize
But she may
that.
Agree with my comments, so...
Let's go ahead and apologize to the Irish. I'm a big fan of the,
yeah,
I'm
we'll
a big
go ahead
fan
and
of
apologize.
The Irish. Fuck Oliver Cromwell.
Yeah, to the M words. But let's jump to me and Wes with the roundup. And welcome to the big game, not the Super Bowl, the big game edition of the NFL Roundup. I'm joined here by Wes Coast. Wes, how you doing, Wes? Are you ready for the big game? Are we ready? Don't call the Super Bowl, please.
I'm ready. Are you ready? I mean, this is the Super Bowl of podcast segments, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think anybody would argue that. Yeah. I don't know about yourself. I'm sure you wouldn't, though.
No. It's definitely the big game, the podcast segments. I don't know about calling it the S word. You can't say that anymore. NFL might sue you. But
true.
Ready for the big game. I will say that, Wes, opening up as a Falcons fan, I don't know if I'm like hyped enough quite yet. I don't know if that makes me a bad person or not, but I'm just kind of ready to get everything over with at this point.
You know what, man? It's only we're recording this a few days prior. I think you'll really start to pick up steam come Friday, somewhere around there. I mean, when that game is really inside, when you can taste it. But seriously, I mean, where's your mind at right now in terms of this game and this team? Are you feeling good about it?
There's like two ways. I don't know how to think right now as a Falcons fan, because this Falcons team may be actually really good, and I'm not used to that. But in the back of my head, I'm just like, it's Brady, it's the Patriots, they always win. Unless they're playing Eli Manning. But at the same time, I'm like, well, Brady doesn't do so well against a pass rush. Anytime he's run into a good pass rush in the Super Bowl, he hasn't done so well. And no offense to your Seahawks, but they didn't really have that one pass rusher who is maybe as good as like a Vic Beasley. And you saw Von Miller's giving Brady fits in the AFC playoffs recently. So, you know, and Vic Beasley is a guy we can kind of compare to Von Miller, especially how he's playing this season. So I'm just not sure. I'm kind of going into this game with like a question mark over my head. I'm like Solid Snake. I've got the question mark over my head right now. I don't know what's going on.
You know what? You know, you sound like a young me right now. Rewind this thing. You know, you got a little more twang to you, obviously, probably a little more hope in your life overall. But you sound like me when the Seahawks and the Broncos were set to do battle. I felt the exact same way. I mean, this was a team that looked good all year long. I'm talking about the Seahawks, but I was nervous. That was a high octane offense in Denver with Peyton Manning, one of the greats. And I didn't really know either. I wanted to believe, and I did believe the team was good. But even that Sunday morning, I remember nervously vacuuming my house several times over and just trying to occupy my mind. And look how that turned out. The better team came out won, and that's what I think is going to happen.
And Wes,
so you have reason to be optimistic.
Help my memory here. Who did that Seahawks team beat before they went to the Super Bowl?
Oh, it's funny you should mention that. They went in and actually, the NFC Championship game, arguably the best game of the year.
The Richard Sherman game, as I think people...
Yes, sir, with the tip. Yeah. San Francisco 49ers, the tip in the end zone, the pick, and that was it. Bringing down the once mighty San Francisco
49ers. No, but similar to the Falcons that way is what I want to point out, a team that many people probably favored to beat the Seahawks. Even though the Seahawks, I believe, played that game at home, the Niners were the hot stuff that year.
Yes. That's exactly right. I mean, I think there are parallels in the way that Colin Kaepernick was playing at that time and how Aaron Rodgers was playing recently, and all you heard all week long was how this is the team to beat. And we saw what happened both in 2014 and now in just last week. I mean, I really like the Falcons. I have all year long. I've said it over and over again. I just think they're built solidly inside and out on both sides of the ball. And I think this whole thing of the New England being an experienced team in the Super Bowl, I think that's way overrated. There's only a few guys on that team who've been before, and the dynamic is different every year. I like the Falcons, and I think more importantly, the Falcons believe in themselves.
No, I think like you see the confidence from Atlanta, and I go back to Media Day on Monday, and it was this team wants to win for Atlanta. They're extra, you know, I don't know, a lot of teams that go into Super Bowl extra motivated, but I think there's especially something this Falcons team wants to prove and be remembered as one of the most beloved teams in the history of Atlanta, because the Falcons win, screw the 95 Braves. This is the biggest win in the history of Atlanta. Hands down, like way more important than the year everybody hated baseball.
Yeah,
this would be a team that we'll never forget. You know, Julio Jones and Matt Ryan. If they win this game, instantly they're up there with Dominique, Matt Ryan. Michael Vick, Hank Aaron, some of the Atlanta greats. We can see two guys like probably get statues built for them if they win this game.
That's what I would predict. I would say, if nothing else, you'll have a street here and there named after Julio Jones, like Jones Avenue or something like that. Probably already exists.
Peachtree Jones would be.
Yeah, there you go. But I mean, the point is I have heard this team talk and describe themselves as, and their brotherhood that they share. And I mean, we didn't get that from either of the teams last year. I don't care what anybody says. Carolina was just kind of a. They ended up being a flash in the pan, really, and Arizona's the same. I mean, both these teams were lifeless. This is the type of team who clearly wants it as badly as any other team does, and I think there's got to be some natural complacency on the New England side. They've been there how many times in the past 15 years? It just can't be the same.
Yeah, and you know, Wes, and I'm not going to stick to sports here. This game feels very political, though. It feels like maybe the nation, maybe I'm crazy here, might be rooting for my Falcons, especially maybe my left-leaning friends. It feels like there's a lot of heat on the Patriots because of major connections to our president. Whether it's Brady with the, you know, clearly campaigning for Trump, he can pretend it was just a hat in his locker, he knows what he's doing. Or it's Kraft, who was a big Trump, you know, probably gave him a lot of money. And then you look on the Falcons side, and Arthur Blank is a lifelong Democrat. Even, I believe, called out on Mr. Robert Kraft on the NFL Network, or FS1 this week, when they asked who's the most famous person in your cell phone, and Arthur Blank kind of threw some shade at one Mr. Kraft about Trump being the most famous man in his cell phone.
Well, that's shade that Mr. Kraft deserves. You're on the money. I know around here, at least. I mean, we can cover this coast to coast. That's the
time. Yeah, that's why we have you here, Wes. What's the left coast thinking?
Everybody I know is fully behind the Falcons. I think you truly are the America that I love's team, at least. And it's become literal to the point where Trump, hell, he called your city a shithole a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, there's no love lost between Trump and the Trump supporters, i.e. Bob Kraft, Tom Brady, and the city of Atlanta and the Atlanta Falcons. So there's really a lot on the line here. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons really put it on New England. I would expect an executive order to come out that we may not like.
The Pats won the Super Bowl executive order. But no, it's just, you know, we bring this up and it's just very apparent because, like, you look at Boston, and Boston's a historically white Irish town, Catholic.
Racist.
And maybe. Racist. Pretty racist. But you look at Atlanta, and Atlanta's the home of diversity. It's the home of the civil rights movement. It's the home of John Lewis, Martin Luther King, and others. It's just a very, like, interesting matchup that we get this year with who our president is, especially with all the heat on one Mr. Trump so far. So, like,
south of the,
yeah.
I mean, you've got your team is, your city is the melting pot as far as
I'm
concerned.
And Atlanta would be your melting pot, especially of the south. Like, I think of near where I live. I can go to Perimeter Mall, which is just right outside the perimeter here, basically in Atlanta. And as a white male I may not see anyone else who looks like me when I'm in there. This is a diverse city. It's a city that Trump lost in the South. So what I'm interested in, though, is like, how do you think this politicalness plays into the game, or do you think the players don't really care? They're here to play, right? Or is in the back of Julio Jones's mind, well, I got to win this one to shut up these, you know, racist Trump people from the Pats.
There are layers, probably, is the way I would say it. I think the first layer is exactly what you said. They're here to win a game, but I can't see how anybody with a heart would hear the comments levied against Atlanta. The false claims, the fake news, if you will, about Atlanta and how horrible it is there. And if you have a heart, I mean, how can you not want to put your city on your back and say, no, it's a great city, we're a great team, and everything that you stand for is old news. It's lifeless. They play a lifeless brand of football at a lifeless stadium. I mean, you've watched Patriots games. We've obviously chronicled them here. There's no worse experience than the
It's not fun. It's like the Pats fans don't really cheer because, like, maybe they're just can't get excited if it's not a Super Bowl, but I don't know how many of those fans could afford to actually go to the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just – and, you know, Wes, not to go all Falcons fans here, but it does annoy me when Pats fans will post, well, our city won, you know, 6 championships when you have won. And it's just like, oh, did you win those championships? Because I don't contribute anything to these championships Atlanta has won or will win. And my city's still way better than your city. Because I think that's the thing with Atlanta is our city's good enough where we don't have to worry about sports. You say we're a bad sports town, but it really just means we're just a good town or a good city. The weather's great. We have beautiful parks. We're minutes away from the mountains. I mean, sorry, Boston, but your city sucks. It's probably cold year-round. You're full of a bunch of douchebag Irish racist assholes. And with Atlanta, we're a party city, and we're diverse. Everybody comes to Atlanta.
You made an interesting point, one that I can relate to, in that when talking about your city and what sports means to the city, but also how it's not the end of the world if the sports team is not successful. And you've dealt with your share of mediocre years.
Yeah.
Seattle's, I mean, well, really, once again, we parallel each other. We've had a lot of bad years. Hell, we don't care so much up here that we'll just...
Yeah, because you live in a great team. You live in a great city. So, Wes, here's my kind of main point, rounding to this point. Are the cities that care the most about sports, those fan bases, are those generally like the worst cities? Because like, even Yankees fans don't really care that much about them, because they know they live in the best city in America. And it seems like the best, you know, I'm doing quotation, the best sports cities are like some of the worst cities in America, let's be honest. Like Green Bay? Who wants to live in Green Bay?
That's the thing. I mean, when you think about these cities, what do you think of? You think of sports, and then once the topic turns to anything else, not only is it not interesting, it turns dark if you think about Pittsburgh. It turns dark when you think about Boston. And we won't even get into New York and all that, but I think your point is well taken. And it's not a good sign, because as much as we love sports here on the NFL Roundup and on this podcast in general, I mean, there's more to life. And there's no perspective here. These people are dying day after day.
Yeah, and like that's kind of my general point, where it's like I feel like these Boston fans care more about sports than maybe having fun in their personal lives. And maybe that's just me being an Atlanta fan who's just, oh, my team lost, who cares? I can go party anyway. It doesn't matter. I feel like these people really take these things to heart, because end of the day, you're living in Massachusetts – and Massachusetts sucks. You can tell me how you know South Georgia's a shithole or whatever, but give me warm weather in the beach, or give me the mountains. Give me spring in Atlanta over spring in Boston all day. I kind of get why Boston people care about sports so much after this, though, because you know, honestly, Wes, Falcons lose. It's March in a couple of weeks. I'm gonna be at Piedmont Park drinking a beer, enjoying my 75-degree weather.
I mean, this is great news, because you have the proper perspective. You'll wake up on Monday morning regardless. You may be overjoyed or you may be a little bit bummed. It depends on what happens, obviously, but your life goes on, and it's not dictated by sports. And I think you make another good point. It's like we all refer to our teams as with the we word. You know, we went out there and lost. But at some, and we all know what we're talking about. It's not to be taken seriously yet. Some of these cities cross the line, and like you said, they do truly believe in their heart of hearts that that they either played on the field or contributed to the win in some way. And I guess it's kind of rich that I say this given the reputation of the quote 12s in this area, but that's a minority, man. You can't believe what you hear on TV. Yeah. Again, it's fake news.
But I think it's just funny with the Patriots who hate Goodell so much. If it wasn't for Goodell, the Patriots would probably be playing in, what, New Hampshire right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of funny how that works out there with Boston. But not to bash the Boston sports fan too much. They're just, you know, a drunk, unemployed, racist, bigot.
Racist.
Kind of asshole. Like Mark Wahlberg. So that's your biggest hero in Boston.
No, let's say no more, right?
But let's compare Boston to Atlanta real quick, though. In terms of entertainment value, is it fair to say Atlanta's kind of blowing out Boston in this general area? If we include hip-hop, which may be banned in some homes in Boston?
Yeah, man. What does Boston bring to the table hip-hop-wise? I mean, House of
Pain. Mark Wahlberg.
From the area. Well, that's a tough hole to get out of.
Mark Wahlberg is kind of their be-all, end-all with Boston because he can act, he can hip-hop, he can dance, and he can punch the shit out of some minorities.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's not really, like, the thing about Wahlberg is as ridiculous as he appears, when you break it down, I'll watch a Mark Wahlberg film.
Yeah, I have, you know, Four Brothers, one of my favorite movies, but, you know, I mentioned Four Brothers, who else is in that? Andre 3000. From Atlanta. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there's no contest there, obviously, when it comes to most mediums of art, I would say. But, yeah, Wahlberg, I mean, he's got things going for him, no doubt. We're not here to hate on the guy, but just...
I'm here to hate on Mark Wahlberg, because he did kind of beat up an Asian man because he was Asian. So, Mark Wahlberg... And, you know what? He makes most of his movies suck.
Yeah,
I don't feel bad about that.
Yeah, well, I know. Did he not recently put out a Boston Marathon film?
Yeah, Boston's. I forget the name, but use Boston Strong. Hashtag Boston Strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a city that's so far up its own ass. It's just unbelievable. I mean, you could have been born and you could have lived anywhere, really. I mean, it's not quite the example of where you were born, but most of these people just happen to live in the city and they come up thinking they're the greatest things in the world. And that's a dangerous mindset.
No, it is.
It's just stupid.
It is. And it's funny how Boston thinks of themselves as the birth of, you know, the American movement and all this stuff. But... and this kind of contrasts how maybe the racial divide with this game. Atlanta's kind of the birth of the civil rights movement. Maybe the birth of America working for African-American or Hispanic or people of color might be a better way to umbrella them. So I feel like we do have this divide with this game where Boston feels very pro-Trump, maybe white, maybe pro-America. Well, maybe Atlanta's a little more pro-black. Pro Martin Luther King, pro these civil rights type of things. It kind of feels like this weird struggle with the Super Bowl. It feels like more than a game. It feels almost like a weird racial divide on how we're playing here. Yeah. Does that make sense? It's not to make the game more than it's supposed to be, but symbolically, it feels different than other Super Bowls with Atlanta versus Boston. You know, Boston, a historically white Irish city. Atlanta, the black mecca. It just feels weird this year. Is that wrong to say? Maybe that's how it feels as an insider. How do you feel as an outsider, like, kind of hearing that? Does that make sense, or do you disagree? And it's fine if you disagree.
Once again,
you know, we'll only label you a racist and kick you off of here. So, no, I'm just kidding.
I would let you know if I disagreed, and I would take whatever label you throw my way, but I think you're right on yet again. When you talk about symbolism, I think when I think of Atlanta, I think of progress. When I think of Boston, I think status quo. When I think of Atlanta, I think of a kaleidoscope of colors, figuratively and literally. And then when I think of Boston, it's just, I mean, the color that comes to mind with Boston is just gray or white, but gray. You know what I'm saying?
It's yeah, like people inspiring. Who can't even get a tan. Like if they get a tan, it just kind of turns gray and it's ugly. Like,
Yeah. Like cigarette ash on the ground. I mean, that's how I just picture
it. Yeah, it's the think, Super Bowl is cigarette ash versus blood ash. Might be another way to look at it.
It is. It is. And if you're going to pick one, I mean, I think that I know the choice that I would make.
Yeah.
I can't speak for everybody else, but the point is well taken. This is hope versus nope as far as I'm concerned, yeah. And I'm with the Falcons.
Yeah, and it's not to make things political, Wes, but it's just when you kind of think of Atlanta versus Boston, like I said, it just feels political. It feels like this weird divide with America that we kind of have right now. And it's kind of appropriate that our Super Bowl can encapsulate the feelings of America, and it kind of shows, like, this is why the Super Bowl is important. And it's nothing the NFL did. It's just how things turned out. But how funny is it that the Super Bowl this year feels very much like, two different Americas going at it, basically.
It does. Yeah, the chips fell in a very interesting way, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on if we'll see any very blatant displays of this, whether it be at the halftime show or some sort of presentation throughout the game. I mean, do you think we see anything that really takes our focus?
What do you think of, I believe the halftime show this year is what, Lady Gaga?
Yeah.
Who is politically active, and Lady Gaga has, gone out and fought, especially for gay civil rights. She's definitely somebody who made her money and then tried to use her influence to make change in the way she felt was the right way. I don't think I think Lady Gaga's caught a lot of heat, especially this past week on social media, because a lot of people maybe feel a more Atlantan-style artist should be featured in the halftime show. And if we saw this, there's a petition going around to get Migos to play at halftime, who are one of the more popular, hip-hop, if you will, groups going around right now.
I think to me, T.I. would be the only choice that I would make. I mean, from an outsider.
Well, what, Outkast.
Or Outkast.
Okay.
Yeah. Outkast. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. How about both?
Outkast played with the Allman Brothers? That'd be like the most Georgia you could possibly get. I think would be.
Yeah, it sure would. It sure would, and it wouldn't be a bad thing. And that'd be actually.
Let's maybe get that together. That's maybe something I would pay money to go see.
Yes, the Outkast Allman Brothers tour. If that comes out this way, if that comes even to California, I'd attend that. I'd drive down to catch that one.
Yeah, but I think we look at this halftime. I think there's a performance from Hamilton in there, which is a very, kind of lame.
Oh, God. Hope Mike Pence isn't there.
Do you even know who's singing the halftime? Who's singing the national anthem?
No, I really don't. I mean, I assume they'll bring a basset hound out and our go-to animal.
But let's take a hard look at this game, though, before we kind of stop talking about it. End of the day, as an Atlanta fan, I just assume we'll lose.
Wait, one second. I hate to interrupt you. Super Bowl halftime show. I'm sorry. National anthem. Luke Bryan.
Yeah, so this is pretty much Trump's America.
Let's get to the game.
So let's get to the game. I just, as an Atlanta fan, I have to assume things will go as wrong as possible. We saw where Kyle Shanahan may have lost his playbook for half an hour yesterday. I'm not sure it fell into the hands of Belichick, but I'm not 100% sure it did not. I could see it coming out 5 years from now that Belichick got the playbook somehow, and Atlanta lost by 20. It's just me being an Atlanta sports fan. If something's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong. And
I think you're being kind right now. It's pretty clear to me exactly what happened. It's funny how something always comes up with the Patriots, and a guy who's probably never lost his playbook in his life apparently misplaces it. I think there's more to this story, and it'll come out. But it's not a good sign early on in the week.
No.
I will say that much.
But who do you like in this game? Like, we've talked about everything. We talked about the pass rush from Atlanta. Obviously, Tom Brady is experienced versus, kind of a rookie defense. what's going to kind of happen? We're thinking like we're going to hit the over under here. Like, are we going to hit the over? Are we going to have a high scoring game, or will we see the Pats defense maybe dominate the Falcons?
I think we hit the over, but I think it's because Atlanta takes care of most of that. I like Atlanta big here. To me, I don't see any way New England stops the Atlanta offense. I'm so impressed with what do you do? If you bring pressure on Atlanta, well, you've got some speedy backs out of the backfield that are more than happy to catch a dump off and run it down your throat pretty easily. And if you don't put pressure on Matt Ryan, that's about the worst thing that you can do, because he's an assassin when it comes to, you know, when you give him time at all, he'll make the right decision probably 100% of the time. That's what he's best at. He's a cerebral player, to use some code wording there.
The cerebral assassin.
He is the game. And so with that in mind, I think Atlanta can score almost at will. I don't like the Patriots defense. I don't care who's playing back there, who they trying to convince me is sneaky good in that secondary or something along those lines. And I agree with you.
Made the comparison. Like I said, Wes, and you may know this, so maybe you're teaching me how to win properly, but my team's just blowing a lot in championship scenarios. And even the one time we won, nobody really cared. So it's just, I feel like Atlanta's kind of never won a world championship in sports. I'm not sure we do now. We have run into probably the greatest dynasty in the history of sports, or the history of professional football, at the very least. Mm-hmm. And, I don't love our chances. I know the matchups make sense, but I think Brady's gonna break my heart in the end. That's how I feel.
Again, this is all good. This is a good sign. You're not cocky at all. You have your edge. This is how I believe the Falcons are right now mentally. They believe in themselves, but not to a point where it's detrimental and they go out there thinking they're gonna run up the score. I mean, that's what I think is gonna happen from the outside looking in, but you talk about Brady and the elites. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks supposedly faced the best quarterback in the history of the game at one point, and an offense that was running up 48 points on everybody week after week after week. I think one thing to never overlook is that the Atlanta Falcons are battle-tested, whereas the New England Patriots played the sisters of the poor throughout the playoffs. I'm not impressed with the New England Patriots.
Right, and you know what, Wes? I wouldn't think the Falcons have as much of a chance if the Pats had Gronk, because Gronk would be such a matchup that they could exploit to make things work in their favor. But he's hurt. So it's just, I think that increases the Falcons' odds of winning. But let's look at some Vegas odds real quick before we jump to another topic. Over-under sitting at 58.5. I think I like the under there. I don't think this is as high scoring as people think. I think there's a lot of nerves in this game, especially with the week, you know, the week in between. I think that kind of slows down momentum for both teams.
Yeah, I don't know about how you feel. Well, first and foremost, I feel like I need to kind of take back what I said in the previous five minutes there, because I didn't realize the over-under was that high. But it's representative of how I feel the game is going to go. And I mean, the thing about the Super Bowl, it doesn't even feel like a football game for most of the first quarter. It's like you're playing in this foreign-looking environment, which is going to look worse than ever, by the way, because it's in Houston of all goddamn places. And so it's a feeling-out process. Both teams have to get loose and get warmed up. So I might actually be, despite what I just said, maybe I go with the under now that I know it's at 58.
Yeah, it's a high under. And then the spread, Patriots by 3. I'll go on record, Patriots by 3.
Yeah, well, this is where we're going to part ways in the road, as they say yet again, and I will take the path less traveled, it appears, and I will take the Falcons by 13 when it's all said and done.
Cool. All right, but let's jump west from this. This is a story that broke today on Tuesday. It'll probably still be a story in Super Bowl week. LeBron James kind of criticized Charles Barkley today for criticizing him about certain things, especially maybe calling out the owners to maybe have a better team. I want to kind of jump back to NBA on TNT on Monday night, though. Yeah, Charles Barkley criticized LeBron for calling out his owner on how to repeat. And Barkley's thing was, well, you just won a title, why are you complaining? And Barkley immediately was shut down by Shaquille O'Neal, who said, No offense, Charles, but you've never won back-to-back titles, or any title at all, mind you. So my first thing here is, does Barkley really understand what it means to repeat if he never has before? Can a player understand the mindset of LeBron James right now if he's never even won a championship before? Is that a fair criticism?
It's tough to say because Barkley, say what you will about him, he was a hell of a player in his prime, and he took some pretty bad teams to some pretty decent heights,
yeah,
particularly
I think to be fair, Barkley's a top, probably easy top 50 player. You can argue top 25 ever in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And he was, I mean, he was surrounded by some teams that were severely loaded in those early 90s, particularly. Obviously, we need not say much more about the Chicago Bulls, but there were a lot of other good teams out there, too. And it just never really worked out
for him. No, he ran into, you know, even with you, when he was with the Suns, he ran into a really solid Rockets team. And obviously, with Philadelphia, he ran into, you know, the Jordan Bulls. And mind you, at that time, he still ran into the Pistons, even the Hawks were, you know, I don't think they ran into each other in the playoffs, but they would mess with your standings. East was pretty damn good back in the 80s, too. People forget that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, a lot of competition out there. Yeah. And I think it is a fair thing to say because, more importantly, it's a different time, a different era. And I don't think as good as Charles Barkley was, in a lot of ways, he was the anti-LeBron James in the way he portrayed himself both on and off the court. And I don't think anybody can really understand what's in LeBron James's mind or the weight that he carries on his shoulders. I mean, I've been critical of him in the past. He gets on my nerves with the amount of on-court complaining.
No, okay. And Wes, I mean to interrupt you there, but we bring up that about LeBron, how he kind of gets on your nerves about being perfect. But he brought this up, you know, with his, you know, his diss on Charles Barkley, and it was, this is a guy who spit on a child, threw a man through a window, didn't show up to the All-Star game because he was too busy getting drunk in Vegas. This is a guy who owed, you know, probably eight figures in gambling debts at various times to Las Vegas, you know, whatever. What's the sports folks? So is it fair for LeBron to say, well, Charles Barkley wasn't the best person in the world, and how can he criticize me when, you know, maybe he is kind of a piece of shit? Got a DUI. So, like, Charles Barkley probably could have killed somebody, but he got lucky. So let's phrase it with that. Is it fair for LeBron, a guy who's had no major controversies in his career besides of where he chose to go work, which is, you know, his right. This is a guy who's never done anything wrong legally in his career. Is it fair for him to call out Charles Barkley, a guy who has done a lot of things wrong in his career?
I mean, I have to give LeBron credit for standing up for himself. And none of this happens if Charles Barkley doesn't repeatedly throw stones at the guy. And I think that's what it boils down to. I mean, they're both individuals who've made choices. LeBron has kept his nose clean almost completely from what I know outside of rumors here and there, but that's completely
unsubstantiated. Well, even most of the rumors, let's address them real quick, were mostly like about his mom banging somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
LeBron, like, even being, like, a bad person. Like, to be fair to LeBron, and, like, this kind of makes this thing my stomach to do, this is a guy who you've never even heard a story about him, like, denying a kid an autograph. LeBron's, like him or not, he's a pretty good guy. He's a Ned Flanders at the very least.
I think that's fair to say, and it's important to remember how big of an asshole Charles Barkley truly was. He wasn't hated for what he did on the court. He was hated for, like you mentioned, his behavior and the way that he – I mean, he kind of didn't give a fuck in a bad way, too. It was one of those things where a little effort would have gone a long way with a guy like that, but he was set in being a defiant anti-role model, as he always said.
But you know what, Wes? I want to come on and say – that's okay that Charles Barkley wanted to be that.
Yes.
But it's another thing when you're in a position, you know, 20 years later, to criticize another player and to not expect that things you did in the past will come back to haunt you. I think that's fair.
That's the crux of,
you know,
it's fair. It's the crux of the issue. I would encourage anybody to be who they are. If you want to be a role model, embrace it. If you don't, I mean, I'm happy that Charles Barkley was who he was, but this isn't an issue if he doesn't routinely criticize LeBron. And he's been doing this for a couple of years now. Yeah. Every time LeBron has a, even has a bad game, is so much, he'll jump to some quick conclusion. And so that's where this starts. And from LeBron's side, I'm sure it'll end now. I'm sure he finally got fed up and decided he wanted to say something publicly about it, and did so in a pretty convincing manner. I mean, he really put a little thought into this, and I'm sure Barkley will respond and probably continue to say what he says, because that's really kind of who Charles Barkley is, unfortunately. I mean, I find him entertaining, but he spends a lot of his time in the negative specter, and it's not. I mean, you got to believe he's a little unhappy about things.
I think LeBron said it perfectly. As we kind of get ready to wrap this discussion up, Barkley's a hater. That's what Barkley's kind of made his brand. He's a hater. For better or worse, however you feel about that term, Barkley's made his name, especially as an analyst, as being a guy who's going to hate on things. He's not as far from Skip Bayless as people want to think.
The difference is
Barkley kind of earned the right to make criticism, while Bayless really never did.
Barkley has been a villain most of the time. Yeah. If you're going to categorize somebody, and it's not completely black or white, but that's what he portrayed in his playing days, and that's the route he's gone now. And I think part of it is calculated at this point. I mean, I think he understands he's fallen into this role on that show, and so it kind of feeds off of itself, and they've got a dynamic on that show where he is the dissenter all the time, and he brings things down, whereas on the other side, I mean, I think Shaq's an idiot. I don't think he brings much to the table either, but he kind of is known now for his, I don't know.
Well, at least he's kind of been known for kind of challenging Barkley on these things. Yeah. It kind of feels Shaq's maybe more defending people he knows, because he's played more recently than Barkley, and he's played with a good portion of the superstars that we see in the NBA today. I think that's fair, though, to say that Shaq's kind of the defender of the current NBA roster. And Kenny Smith to a lesser extent, because Kenny kind of gets it, too, better than most.
Right, right. The only thing with Shaq is don't ever say a big man currently playing is on Shaq's level. I mean, yeah. That's when Shaq will go straight into hater mode. I mean, Shaq's got his hate to him as well, too. Just if you dare to insult his ego, then you're probably going to get some words out of him.
I think that's fair,
but I agree.
To be fair to Shaq, not many big men today are really on his level, but we're probably a year from Towns being the best big man we've ever seen. So. Yeah, we'll stay woke there. Yeah, stay woke.
Yeah.
Towns is probably going to end up being the best big man of all time. Sorry, Wilt Chamberlain. Sorry, Kareem.
Well, it's high praise, but I like that type of
thing. I think Cat's there. We'll kind of be looking. We'll probably talk about this a year from now. Because I think Towns is a very special player that we may never see again. Because we're looking at a guy who's near 7 foot, who can shoot the basket and probably could run point if you really asked him to.
I mean, I know this is an understatement, but the type of athlete we're starting to see in the NBA is just freakish beyond all belief.
Wes, that reminds me, before we close out here on our roundup, Steven Jackson, this might be a shocker, Wes. Don't be shocked. May have been high before he played a few NBA games.
No, this can't be true.
This can't, right? Like, are you telling me, Wes, that these NBA players are such great athletes that they can be high and still play excellent basketball? Is that what I'm hearing?
I find it hard to believe. Yeah. No, I don't find it hard to believe, actually. And I'd be more disappointed in Steven Jackson if he came out and said that he wasn't high for at least 75% of the games that he played in, really. I mean, that would bring me down. This news is good news.
I think it's good news. A, if you're pro-marijuana legalization, well, it's banned. How many guys won an NBA title while they're smoking weed? Clearly can't be that big of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, that's a show in and of itself, but it is pretty amazing that he was even able to get out onto the court. I mean,
especially amazing as a guy who prefers to, maybe if he were to get high, to sit around and play, you know, Super Mario all day. But it shows you, though, and this is kind of my main point with this, top-level athletes are so good at athleticism or at their sport. It doesn't matter what they're on. You think back to I'm blanking on the name. Pirates pitcher who's on acid, LSD, throws a no-hitter.
Oh, yeah.
and you think back to, like, Otis Nixon or, like, some of these, you know, players from the 80s who may have been high on crack and played at a high level. It shows how great of an athletes America's professional athletes are. That we can have athletes who are inebriated and still dominate.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Wasn't Doc Gooden?
Doc Gooden. I want to say Dwight Gooden, but I'm glad you corrected me there.
yeah. It is unbelievable. I mean, that's one of those things where, again, it's hard to ever play an armchair quarterback with any professional athlete unless you fully understand. And I think we do here.
Yeah.
Just how goddamn good these guys are at what they do and how it's remarkable, the skill level. And what it takes to play at that level, and if you can do it,
and it shows it shows how gifted these men are. Where it's like they can be hung over, like Jordan can have the flu and still drop almost 40 points.
Yeah,
when you and me have the flu, Wes, we're in bed, wanting to get out of bed all day. Meanwhile, an athlete the caliber of a Jordan or whomever else has had the flu when they played, you know, their sport, can excel and dominate at times. And it just shows, especially with the NBA, doesn't matter what these guys are on, they're still the best athletes in America, hands down to me.
Could you imagine? Well, I agree with that before we go any further. I mean, that's a subject to debate, but the NBA is where the freakiest of the freaks are. But could you imagine if you and I both had the flu at the same time and we agreed to meet at some playground and play one-on-one?
I'm not even sure we could record this podcast if we both had the flu, let alone get out of our houses.
Exactly. So you have Michael Jordan with the flu, who not only gets out there and plays but dominates the elite competition in the process. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
Well, even didn't have the best performance against Atlanta, but even Aaron Rodgers had flu-like symptoms and didn't have he had a pretty bad game. Maybe that shows why Aaron Rodgers is kind of a pussy and a piece of shit. But there are other athletes, Mason Crosby won, who had the flu, kicked a game-winning field goal. So even in the NFL, where you might see some of the lesser athletes, especially North American sports, can persevere with one of the worst sicknesses you can get. Without that.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like you said, most of us are either laying on a floor somewhere or huddled up under several beds.
With a gun in our mouth, ready. Just in the pain.
Hey, when it gets bad, we've all been there. You go from thinking you might die to actually hoping you'll
all right.
die.
But Wes, before we get out of here for the roundup, we have your final Super Bowl prediction. Any extracurricular activities we might see in the Super Bowl, though? Are you predicting anything wild might happen this year? Last time Super Bowl was in Houston, we saw kind of a titty for the first time on national TV. So,
Did
we get a titty this year? Does Lady Gaga show us the areola?
I'm willing to bet she puts her body on display to some degree, whether it's quite as blatant as that was. I mean, I think it's more likely that we just get hit by consistent revealing outfits. She's got the type of thighs that could be put on display. God, I'm really veering into some different
territory. Are you saying we get a little Arby's action
I wasn't going to come out and say it, but I think we creep up into that region, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some folds that some young fellas may never have seen before. So, I mean, that's the Super Bowl for you.
Yeah, so I think it's the Super Bowl. Either Super Bowl you'll never remember, or it's going to be the one of the most memorable of your lifetime. But
I just think this one is shaping up as low-key as we are about it right now and how we're not feeling the hype yet. I'm with you there. But I think this is a good matchup. I think people care about these teams as we went into detail on much more than Carolina, Arizona from last year.
Or Carolina, Denver from last year. People forget that.
That one as well. Yeah, I keep throwing the card. That's how much I gave a shit about the team that won the Super Bowl last year.
Forget that. Probably one of the worst Super Bowls of all time last year.
Terrible. Terrible. We're due. I mean, it goes back and forth. We had the quote-unquote great New England-Seattle game, which is, you know, a bit of a sore subject here, but I got over it because I have other things in my life. But prior to that, we had a blowout, so it kind of goes back and forth. And I think this year, between the teams on the field, the halftime show, and the threat of seeing some crotch, Luke Bryan opening things up, we've got the social dynamic that you broke down so nicely. I mean, this thing, this could be one to remember. This may be the last Super Bowl we ever see.
Yeah, this could be the last Super Bowl I ever get. But let's jump back to me and Dan now. To maybe break down while the world's ending. A little stick to sports for me and Dan. Let's do it now.
Sure.
All right, we're back. Things got pretty dark there near the end, Dan. Were you familiar with the LeBron James Barkley kind of controversy that kind of blew up on Tuesday?
Yeah, that was fun. All
right, you got to give some quick thoughts on that?
Let's talk about that. What I love about it is that LeBron has taken more shit than probably any elite player in NBA history. Maybe Julius Erving took more because he had those years in the ABA where people were like, oh, that's bullshit league. So he had to have that period of like proving I'm actually great, which was ridiculous.
Cause but just to be fair, him. Dr. J did have social media. He didn't have Sports Center. Yeah. He didn't have cable TV.
He didn't have to personally like read people being a complete.
LeBron feels like the first basketball player that grew up in this era. Like even when he was in high school, you know, you're watching videos on the internet, and it just feels like the first millennial superstar. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, to some extent. Yeah.
More millennial in the extent of what he's dealing with social media and just the hype around him.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt good for LeBron to finally snap and tell Charles Barkley.
Charles Barkley is really entertaining. So that's what I will say first, is that I like Charles Barkley being on TV because he's so much more entertaining than the average studio analyst. And I would rather have Charles Barkley being an idiot than, like, you know, having, like, those NFL guys. Like, the worst was Rondé Barber. Or Tiki Barber. Yeah. I can't remember which Barber it was.
Or anybody from, like, the NFL Network crew, where it's, like,
basically
Nate Washington.
Anybody who does an NFL studio show, where it's just, like, a bunch of chuckling imbeciles who never say anything. Yeah. Like, those guys can all get fucked with a chainsaw. So, like, I give Charles Barkley credit for at least being interesting, even if he is a moron. Shaq crosses the line into being a total imbecile, though. Like, Shaq can join the chainsaw fuck list.
Enjoy, though, the moment when Shaq shut down Charles Barkley when he told him, Charles, be quiet. Only me and Kenny know what it's like to repeat. And Barkley's face just was, well, I can't. He was just, like, shocked and, like, knew he couldn't say anything. And it was kind of nice for Shaq to kind of shut up Barkley sometimes because he's starting to get on my nerves, but I've been around Charles Barkley. It feels like my whole time watching the NBA as a kind of a hardcore fan. So I think the bloom's off at this point.
But the Shaq's problem is that he's a bully and cannot handle ever being joked at. Like Charles Barkley can take some shit. Like Shaq.
Well, and to be fair though, Charles Barkley can mostly take it because he's like really drunk.
Yeah.
The whole time.
And he has a sense of humor about that. Like just in general. Like Shaq is a guy with no sense of humor who pretends to have one. And Charles Barkley actually has one.
Yeah.
But, like, as far as LeBron goes, like, man, if I had to hear all of the the moronic bullshit that that guy has to listen to, I would have fucking lashed out a long time ago. The fact that he held it in as long as he has is like a credit to him as far as like his self-control. And he's right.
I think America's going to like shit. Yeah. I think America's going to like edgy LeBron. I think we kind of want him to just kind of snap and just be like, fuck you. This is stupid. And like get really involved with politics and just say, fuck it.
Yeah,
because he's a billionaire. You know, he's set for life with his Nike contract. So it's probably not going to lose it.
It is a post-Obama world where it's just like, all right, fuck it. I'm not playing around anymore. That NBA, like basically everybody in the NBA is doing. Like Steve Kerr every night is basically just going, this is all bullshit.
Yeah. And Pops is like just turned into like your, you know, like your sociology professor who just goes on rants every day because he just has had it up to here at this point. It's kind of nice. The NBA, that's why it's always my favorite league, the most socially active league.
Sure.
You know, because even for all those voices, you do have guys, you know, like Frank Kaminsky, who's wearing the Killery shirt and things like that. So it's not just one set of opinions. I think it's very nuanced and intelligent how we hear things. It's not like football, where you're not supposed to be a person.
Yeah, or like somehow playing football, like you lose all like sense of autonomy.
Yeah, but as we kind of get ready to wrap up, we not a lot of time with you and me today, Dan, but we had a lot of special guests, or two this week. And you're thinking, why haven't these guys talked about National Signing Day? That was the day you recorded this, right?
Right.
Well, I kind of felt the interest of fairness. Me and Dan need to not devote a whole show to, you know, the entire landscape of National Signing Day less than 24 hours after it happened. I want to take some time to kind of understand what fits for each team. And over the next couple of weeks, we're going to break down conference by conference, how each team kind of did recruiting this year.
Yeah, Dan,
was there anything that kind of jumped out to you today at the very least with National Signing Day?
With National Signing Day, it's that the top teams, like the top five teams, are all kind of bunched up with each other. So Alabama did retain its title as the number one recruiting class in America, but they just barely edged out Ohio State. Like, it's a marginal difference. The difference between even, like, Michigan and Alabama is marginal. So, like, the top five or six teams, they're all right there with each other, talent-wise. Like, if Alabama was to play Florida State tomorrow, Alabama would not have a talent advantage. It would be a wash, really. So I think that's the quick, you know, the quick and dirty National Signing Day discussion there is just there's parity at the top, and you know, we'll dig in deeper when the Super Bowl is not later. Happening.
But before we get out of here, I believe we have a fuck you of the week from Dan, a rare fuck you of the week from Dan Ford.
Fired up about Brady Quinn of all people. Ooh. There was an article published this week, I believe it was on Sports on Earth, about, you know, the phenomenon that now like 50% of quarterbacks transfer now. And Brady Quinn had the most Notre Dame dipshit take in the world, which is this generation just doesn't know the meaning of loyalty. They just don't know the meaning of the word loyalty. They just, like, if they're not able to start as a sophomore, they just don't want to stay. And there's like I've got a bunch of different things here, but there's three points. There's three basic points here. One, Brady Quinn started as a freshman. So he, like, what do you know about having to work your way into a starting lineup? You didn't have to work at all. You started
things
are kind of
handed to you. Yeah.
Like, you immediately started. You have no idea what it's like to spend years on the bench. And if you had, you probably would have, like, if I could think of any quarterback who's played at Notre Dame over the last 20 years, it's him and Jimmy Clausen would have been the most likely to transfer over playing time. So, one step off. Like, you were a golden child. Of course.
Yeah, what did you really ever work for in your life, Brady Quinn?
Yeah. Second point is that it's just the dumbest statistic in the world, because when you're comparing that to 20 years ago, it's the grad transfer rule. Like, you know, dozens upon dozens of kids who in a different era, when you got your degree, if you were not like a third string quarterback, like basically if you graduated from your undergrad and you were going to be slated to be third string, your team would have shaken your hand and said, hey, you know, have a good life. You're, you know, you're always welcome at the alumni meetings. And that would have been the end of your career. Now, because of the grad transfer rule, like, you know, a guy like Shane Morris at Michigan can transfer to, I think he transferred to, like, Western Michigan or something. The Purdue kid, Appleby, you know,
The Alabama kid found out today that he's going to be eligible for next season at Arizona State. Was it Blake Sims?
Blake Sims.
Am I crazy?
I feel like he already graduated, didn't he?
Yeah. Maybe the same started with a B. I don't remember. But the guy who kind of got, Cooper, you know, Mayfin? That herd kind of took a spot, you know, I think he left Alabama after week three. Doesn't have to wait a whole year even now to go play at Arizona State.
Yeah, and like, you know, that's a good thing. Like, a guy whose career would have been over can go play somewhere. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So when you're comparing to eras, when you're saying, oh my God, so many quarterbacks transfer now, and you're not, you know, you're not even considering the fact of grad transfers, already you're a moron. Already your point is stupid. But here's the third point, and I think the bigger point here is that what coach has any loyalty to their players in college football? Like, you find me the one who isn't going to leave his job for an extra million, who isn't going to leave his job for what's best for my family. Tom Herman leaves Houston to go to Texas, and he goes, well, this was the best move for me, my career, my family. And nobody backs
and by the way, I'm pretty excited to rip into its Tom Herman era. It's not starting pretty. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks, though.
Sure.
But something to look forward to.
Like, and even when it's not even the head coach, like, all these kids, they get recruited by a position coach. That's usually who's the guy who builds a relationship on the recruiting trail. Your position coaches, like, they'll leave after 1 year routinely to go move up the coaching ladder, maybe get a coordinator job, or maybe get another position coaching job and meet some new contacts and get some new
stuff on
their resume.
Guy that you trusted that said, I'm going to help build your career, and he just kind of leaves. And that might have been the coach who was kind of looking out for you better than, say, you know, like, if he was your quarterback's coach, he might be looking out better for you than the offensive coordinator at that school.
And what does that coach always tell the kid? Well, it's just a business decision. Yeah. And then you've got the unmitigated gall to tell the player, hey, you got to have unending loyalty to a school that doesn't give a shit about you, to a coach that will leave you at the first step if he can improve his life. You've got to have unending loyalty to them while they all make business decisions.
Well,
like that. Okay, you know, there's a certain guy on the internet, and I don't want to mention him because we're on halfguarded.com and they're mortal enemies. But there's a guy on the internet who hates the term mark, which comes from the wrestling business.
The M word. We don't say that word.
It's as bad. Yeah. It's as bad as the N word to certain people. Yeah,
maybe worse.
But there is nobody who is a bigger mark than a college athlete who goes, I have loyalty to my team above all else. If you do, in the face of all evidence that you will be screwed over at the first step, like if you play at Alabama and Nick Saban gets a guy who runs a 40 a hundredth of a second faster than you, you will be fucking on the first plane to North Alabama University, and he will not give a good goddamn about it.
No.
So if you're going to have that kind of unending loyalty, like, you're a mark.
Yeah. And this may be kind of a stick to sports moment, but this kind of feels just in general how, like, maybe someone from privilege like a Brady Quinn might just kind of not understand the class struggle either, and, like, he's shocked when you might leave your job at, you know, his dad's firm to go take a better job. And he's like, well, where's the loyalty? My dad gave you a job first. And it's like, well, buddy,
your dad would fire me.
It's about money, you know. You don't have to be loyal to anybody, especially in the society that we have. And especially you're not even getting paid. Don't give me that education bullshit, because those guys aren't there to get an education. Like, 10 of them are. Most are there to play football and, like, have fun.
Yeah, and so, and Brady
Quinn. So I feel like
I'm not sure if Brady Quinn is a total imbecile, or if that's just, I'm a Notre Dame graduate, and that's the most Notre Dame fan take, and I'm going to pander to Notre Dame fans.
It's also just a very upper-class kind of guy who's never really had to work for anything. Because, remember, Brady Quinn had quarterback coaches his whole life. He had parents who could afford to, you know, make him look better than he really was. And you know what? Not that great at Notre Dame. Let's be honest.
He's probably the best. Yeah, quarterback one Notre year Dame where
USC,
years.
If they didn't lose to USC, maybe they could have done something. But feels like any time he ran into a big BCS game, he just got destroyed.
Yeah, they got beat. And then when he went to the NFL, he was a total disaster.
Yeah, like, and he was exposed in the NFL, and he's the, which is funny because he's exactly what an NFL team kind of wants out of a quarterback. So
he was a little
kind of tells you how bad Quinn was. That I think he was on two teams in the NFL the whole time.
He was. Here's the big sign that you suck. He was on the Cleveland Browns, and I think he only started like five games. Yeah. If you can't get in at least double digit starts for the Browns, you're the shit. You're the drizzle.
Even Manziel started like eight games before he just like was doing coke on the sidelines.
yeah, he's got like giant. Allegedly. Like he's having nosebleeds, just like, blood gushing out of his nose. And they're just
he
like,
had a needle just falling out of his arm when he was running into the huddle one time.
I mean that's standard NFL behavior though. Like, don't hate on that.
But yeah, I don't disagree with that fuck you. I think that's a good one.
So
that's one of our longer fuck yous of the week too.
Oh, hit it me.
I think I have one. Boston, fuck you.
Yeah, double that.
You know what? It's a shame that your city was the one that got burned down. How about that?
Boston's been burned down, hasn't it?
You know, I think I brought this take up with Wes, but it's when a city has to brag about how good it is at sports, that's how you know that city sucks.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, no one cares because it's beautiful here. You go to L.A., they don't care about sports because that city's beautiful.
They do not give a shit.
Yeah, and rightfully so. When you can go to the beach in December and it's 72, why would I give a shit about sports unless my team's really good?
Yeah.
So I think the mark of a really bad town to live in is how much they care about sports. I think that's a fair take.
And my other thing is that Boston like has this weird place in American culture where we pretend it's important, and it's got like 12 people in it. Like yeah. I think Boston has the same population as like Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah. It's like Boston. Like I think their average GDP wasn't that much higher than Atlanta's. Atlanta's, like, you know, pretty much been active the past maybe 100 years as a major city. So Boston should have had a major start, and they don't. And that's poli sci.
Boston is, like, constantly bragging about how important they were in, like, 1734, when whaling was a major industry in America. Like, hey, you can't beat Boston for whaling.
Like, well, Boston was really big back when they could own everybody that lives in Atlanta. That's when Boston was pretty popular. Yeah,
back when Atlanta was just a series of prostitute. Like, it was just a series of brothels. Like,
Called strip clubs.
Atlanta's first mayor was from, like, what was it called? The Rough and Ready Party? And it was just like a political party made up of bar owners. That's who started Atlanta, bars, which makes it truly America's.
And that's why Atlanta's awesome.
America's true capital.
Yeah. I think, you know, we kind of discussed Super Bowl a little bit. Anything extra weird you think might happen, though? I think we're at the last time the Super Bowl was in Houston. We had the Janet Jackson nipple thing. You think Lady Gaga is going to, like, whip out a dildo or, like, a strap-on and, like, start fucking somebody on stage or anything weird, or are we gonna have like a normal Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, if we can call back like the great internet discussions of 10 years ago, like Lady Gaga reveals finally fully that she is she does have a penis. Like that would be the one great reveal to end all reveals.
Yeah. Like just end of the thing, she's done singing a monster or something and just rips off her skirt and there's a big black dick.
Sure. Sure, she got it colored.
She's been to the tanning booth, but only stuck her dick in there. Ignore the cock, as some of our friends might say.
Ignore that. Ignore it. Come on, man. Why can't you? Let me see. What's my prediction on the song she closes with? What is it? Okay, do you have a prediction while I look at the latest album?
Does she sing, I don't know any Lady Gaga. I'm not trying to sound like I had an ex who loved Lady Gaga, and like I've heard all the songs, but she was like relevant like 10 years ago. Like,
10's stretching it.
Last decade.
She peaked probably in 2008. Which, okay, now that I think about it, is a decade.
Yeah, what's the one, Mike
Bad
Scott?
Romance. Bad Romance is probably the biggest hit.
She'll close with that, or they'll cover, like, some Prince song and, like, botch it. It's a Super Bowl halftime show. They do love the covers, where, like, all the old white people can be like, oh, I know that song. You know, like when they had Nelly do Walk This Way, when he had two of the biggest hits in the country at the time. Super Bowl's a big fan of that.
Well, Applause is like the most stadium show friendly song, if I had to guess. But it's off the last album, and that album bombed. So, I feel like
Lady Gaga, is she going to sing, maybe she does like a little Madonna cover. And then who's everyone always compares her to? Get a little like a version? Well, I guess the NFL won't let you say version.
There's
no way. You
don't
want to offend Goodell, who's never had sex in his life. I'm not sure Goodell's like ever ejaculated period in his life.
Are we sure that he's not like, are we sure that he has testicles? Are we sure about
that? This show took a weird turn.
Are we absolutely positive?
And I'm pretty sure we're both sober right now.
Well, I had a bottle of wine, so I'm buzzing.
There you go.
I mean,
I'm on no sleep. So perfect.
Let me get this done, and then we can wrap things up. But let me see. Let me look at the album list.
Does she sing that song? I'm not like most girls. Nia Jax.
Nia Jax theme. Let's see. Perfect Illusion. She will lead with.
I don't know what that.
That's the single off the latest album.
I don't.
She will definitely lead with that. I think she closes with Bad Romance, because that's her biggest hit.
I think she's going to close with the one where she talks about taking a ride on your disco stick.
That wasn't even on the first album. That was a B-side on Just Dance, the single.
Yeah, that's what I remember. So I think we'll have that. Special guests, probably not, but it'd be kind of cool if Migos showed up, considering they're pretty popular right now.
I don't think she plays anything off her first album. She kind of pretends that album didn't happen. Because that's the album where she had like very little say on anything. It was mostly written by the record company.
So, like I said, we're going to be back next week. We're going to start our first of our kind of themed, in-depth kind of discussion shows as we hit one of the major lulls in the sports seasons.
Sure.
February and what is it, July, Dan, are like the two worst times to be a sports fan.
Well, we'll have the Super Bowl to review as well, so that'll be a big thing.
Yeah, we'll have the Super Bowl to talk about, but we're going to get our first, you know, kind of reactions from the Super Bowl and all that fun stuff, and we're going to start kind of going in a different direction for the podcast, but we're going to kind of pick some topics and talk about them week to week, and I think it's going to be really
less fun. News, more big topics.
Big ideas. We're going more long form.
More of a TED Talk, if you will.
Yeah, well.
But without the cult.
More.
Vibe.
More the cauldron than Barstool, but like, we're not pussies. Would kind of be it. But yeah, Dan,
maybe we'll go deep in depth on the entire discography of Lady Gaga. And I can really nerd
something
out.
I would never allow to happen, people. My final thoughts, though, fuck Boston, fuck New England, fuck Tom Brady, fuck Donald Trump, rise up, baby, in brotherhood. And Michael Vick, we're cool now. I forgive you.
So much worse shit happened since Michael Vick. That it's like, you know what, I can't hold a grudge anymore.
No.
But with that, Tunny, you're still Tunny to me. And with that, I think we gotta play the music, Jason.
Let's do it. What's up?